Hello everyone and welcome back to League Express Towers, and joining me this week for another edition of the Total Rugby League Show, we're joined by Mr. Alex Davis.
Hi, Ben.
Matthew Shaw is here.
Hello.
And it's a welcome return to Mr. Martin Sadler.
The only ever present on the... Well, you are.
I'm always here.
For the last two,
except for 2 weeks in May when I'm on holiday. Booking it in now.
For the last 2 weeks, I've informed everyone that I'd rather not be on that week, but then someone pulls out.
Oh. So we're still having the show.
I'm like riding through an injury.
Here under protest, Matthew.
There was one.
No, it's not under protest. Yeah.
Well, the 1 week he wasn't here.
No, I have done every show this season.
I'm going to go back in the archive. See.
Of course.
But anyway. Lots to talk about on this week's show. We're going to be talking about the World Club Challenge, obviously, shortly. We're also going to be previewing some of the Super League matches which are taking place. We're going to be talking the Challenge Cup 2, the Nines, of course, and Championship. And we're also going to be joined later talking about Rugby League in Spain by CEO of Valencia, Dean Buchan, and Rugby League in the Southwest, as we'll be joined by the Devon Sharks. But this is the Total Rugby League Show, and let's kick things off talking about Saturday night's big game, live on television. It's St Helens against the Sydney Roosters. Who wants to go first? We'll get Alex's view in a minute about the Sydney Roosters. But for Saints, Martin?
Well, it's a massive game, isn't it? I mean, it's a chance to be the best team in the world. We've got an interview with Kyler Moore. I don't know whether Kyler Moore will be in the 17 this Saturday night, but he's pointing out that, when you retire, to be able to look back at your career and say that you played for the team that showed it was the best in the world by winning a world trophy or a World Cup or something of that ilk, it's something that you can never take away from nobody can ever take away from you. So, it's a great prospect.
But Sydney Roosters been training out in Spain. How are they shaping up for this game?
They've brought a strong squad. It's not as strong as the side that won the grand final.
No Cooper Cronk, no Latrell Mitchell.
That's what I was going to say. No Cooper Cronk, no Latrell Mitchell.
That's
big. It is big because they've brought in Carl Flanagan from Cronulla Sharks, and Flanagan's a young lad. He's not the finished package. Obviously, the Roosters will hope that he will become that, but he'll be partnering Luke Keary, who's obviously very capable of doing it himself, to be honest. But as Martin says, Latrell Mitchell is a big loss. And it's not someone they've replaced per
no
se.
No place for Lachlan Lamb on the.
He's coming. Yeah. But it's unlikely, I think, that he will play in front of Flanagan or Keary.
And when it comes to St Helens and how they're shaping up for this one, a good win over Hull at the weekend,
it was
a much
great
needed
win.
Performance as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think St Helens, have had the odds piled against them because I thought it was really bad to give them a game against Hull on the Sunday preceding the Saturday night game. It would have been far better from their point of view to have had the Thursday night game, which would have given them more time to prepare. But having said that, they obviously must have played pretty well. I didn't see the Hull game, but they obviously blasted Hull in the second half. And, hopefully they can carry on that form on Saturday night.
And it'd certainly be better for them coming off the back of that victory rather than coming off the back of being nailed by Warrington.
Oh, yes. It looks as though James Roby's back, doesn't it, for the game?
Mm.
I was going to ask for a squad update. Where are St Helens shaping up for this?
Well, they've got a few back, but Coote's not going to play, is he?
No Percival, of course.
There's no Percival, and Makinson is...
Makinson played on Sunday.
Yes. So they're looking at Coote and Percival.
It'll be also good to see Ryan Hall play for Sydney Roosters. It looks
if
like
he does.
It looks like it probably will, because that's the thing with Latrell Mitchell's exit, is that he's likely to be covered by Brett Morris in the centres, which opens up
the try to sign Josh Morris, aren't they? And the Roosters.
He's at Cronulla at the moment.
Yeah, but they're trying to sign.
Yeah. But they possibly do need a centre because Brett Morris isn't a centre, and he's likely to be. Playing.
But would I assume if Josh was to come, that would push Ryan Hall back out again?
Potentially, but he's got as much right to play in that squad as Brett Morris does.
Remember the game last year when they played Wigan? Brett Morris scored two early tries and absolutely,
yeah, he did.
You know,
he's a quality
ruined player. The game in a way.
I hope that Ryan Hall has a very good season. Likewise with Callum Watkins. The talk in the NRL is that Watkins has been flying in pre-season.
He didn't play in the Nines, though, did he?
No, he didn't. But loads of players didn't play in the Nines.
Mm. I've seen a few articles with Holbrook saying that Watkins has been very, very good in pre-season. Yeah, so let's hope that he has a a good year.
And I was going to say, Gary Schofield has said in his column, you know, St Helens have a chance. It is a big, it's a big night. It's a big night for Christian Wolf as well, really.
They need a good start. If the Roosters get on top and start scoring a few points, then they'll struggle. But if they can really show some Super League grit, then they'll make it a game. And then anyone.
There's some interesting comments in League Express this week again from Kyla Moore saying, you know, contrasting, because if you remember in 2015 they played South Sydney, and they lost 39-0 at Langtree Park, Totally Wicked Stadium as it now is. Carol's comment was that we'd have been as much good if we'd been sitting in the stands just watching, really, on that night. You know, they beat us so easily. But this year, the contrast is that St Helens have a much more stable side.
Yeah.
You know, they won the grand final in 2014, but then lost quite a lot of players that they weren't stable at that time. But now I think they're in a much stronger place.
I'm looking forward to seeing how, in particular, Thompson goes.
Yeah, they're 3-1 against with the bookies, aren't they, St Helens? Yeah. So I think, you know, that's a good bet for some people, I would have thought. But you know, because you might think the Roosters are the favourites, but I wouldn't think they're that strong.
You'd think that Thompson would be well up for showing what he's capable of.
I think I'm looking forward to that. I'm Wormsley, but Thompson more because he's on his way there. I'm disappointed that Purcell don't get to play. Because, you know, we've not really seen him play at the top level because he's been excluded from England games far too much than he should have done. This would have a chance to watch him play real world-class opposition. And he's been robbed of that for injury, which is sad, but that's his rugby.
Well, a big good luck to St Helens this weekend. That game on Saturday night, for those who can't make it in person, 7:45 kick-off. Just a quick run round the table with no, you know, caveats or anything like that. Can St Helens do it, Matthew?
Yes.
Absolutely they can, yeah.
Martin?
Yes, no doubt about
it. There we go. Right, and if they do win, you can read all about it in League Express on Monday. You can also read about some Super League results as well, which are going to be happening this weekend. Friday night, big game. Castleford against Wakefield. Now, who should I go for this? Alex.
Hi.
Alex had an absolute stinker on the tipping comp with these two teams last week.
Oh,
absolute shocker.
Everyone bar one person went for Warrington. And you're saying I had a shocker because you picked them.
Let's start with Wakefield's brilliant win against Warrington.
Yeah.
Which Alex didn't see coming, but then again, not many people saw coming either. I mean,
well, I think in the media tipping competition, only one person went for Wakefield.
I think I'd be forgiven.
My criticism of Alex was that he picked Warrington to win by 20, which, given the conditions, I said days in advance was a leveler, and Alex was having
Matthew was acting like he called this result, but he didn't. He still picked Warrington.
Yeah, but I only had him by 4. I had him by 20.
That's fine then.
That was a scandalous suggestion.
Tries were at a premium for a long stage of this game. The conditions were pretty.
Yeah, they were.
It was good. Actually, to be serious for a moment, it's good to see Tom Johnson scoring again.
It is a bigger question, though.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer in this, and it pains me when coaches do it. Why, having played so well against St Helens, would Steve Price change his spine? Having all performed so well, he dropped
it. Well, next time you might not do it, Matthew, after this experience.
You see it.
He's got Gareth Wood up there, though, hasn't he? I know Matty Ashley.
Was it the right call?
Are you saying that call?
Because they lost.
Right, yeah,
would they have lost with Matty Ashton and the team? Probably.
For me, it's not even a Matty Ashton thing. When you've played well or are playing well, you don't change your spine.
Unless Matty Ashton was injured.
If Warrington win every game from now on,
let me throw it this way at you. If Gareth Widdepa have missed 6 weeks and they'd have won 5 on the bounce, would you just bring him straight back in?
My point is that if Warrington win every game, is Gareth Widdepa not getting that side? I probably would, yeah. I would, because Widdep is a quality player.
For the Warrington-Toronto match later, I've got the question, how did Gareth Widdep do? Thank you for answering it earlier.
There is no way for me, and this is... it's just a belief I have, and, you know, don't mean it's right.
It's not like you're moving players out of position either. Ratchford would move to fullback.
But Ratchford had played so well at standoff the week before.
He's also a quality fullback.
You've moved probably your exceptional performer in the week before to a different position, and one of your other exceptional performers out of the team
altogether.
But you're
moving them to accommodate your marquee player.
But it didn't work, did it?
The thing is, Alex, when you've got a player like Widdop coming back from an injury, which is, you know, a fairly serious injury, really, when all said and done. It's great when you can give him the time to fully recover because other players are playing well in the side.
Yeah.
So it seems ridiculous to me to bring him back, especially to play in appalling conditions, as it was at Wakefield, obviously, on Sunday, given the weekend weather. You know, so you're disrupting your team. I agree with Matt here. You're disrupting your side to bring a player back from injury who's, you know, not had any experience in the team so far this season. It just doesn't seem but very
there's
sensible
another, there's
to
another
me.
Point to make as well. You know, though, Widdop was given the time because he had
there's another point to make. Right, there's another point to make here. Gareth Widdop openly said he'd not played in conditions like that since he was 8 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So throw that into the mix.
Yeah, that's a good
point. That's his debut in conditions that are foreign to him. He's coming into a new team, which he's not going to go into straight
line. It would have been sensible, actually, it would have been sensible from a club's point of view to give Widdop his debut at home.
Yeah.
Marquee signing, you play him at home, so you give him a big, you know, the big trumpet fanfare.
But I tell you if they'd have lost, everyone would have said, well, why didn't you play
Widdop? But the other point...
Well, they would, but they didn't.
Yeah. But the other point...
It's a massive risk. If you lose to Wakefield and you've not played Widdop...
You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. I get that, but it was a wrong call for me.
Don't make me turn the lights on and off. Castleford v Wakefield.
Can I have a few minutes?
We'll get back to Warrington and Toronto in a second. But thank you for covering off Warrington's side of that fixture coming up. But Castleford against Wakefield.
It looks a good game now. Castleford losing in Catalans and Wakefield beating Warrington. It suddenly looks... I mean, Castleford have won 13 games in a row.
They've got a huge
against Wakefield.
Way of beating Wakefield at the moment.
Yeah.
And Cass have a very good tendency of bouncing back well after they lose a game.
And of course... Cass have a good record at home.
There's not very many instances in the last couple of years where Cass have suffered back-to-back defeats. Mm. So
you'd have to back Castleford to beat Wakefield at home because of the history in
recent years. The flip as well is Wakefield. There aren't many instances in the last 18 months where Wakefield have won back-to-back games. No. So for me, I'd be going Castleford.
We should congratulate Sam Tompkins on a brilliant hat-trick against Castleford. Yeah. James Clare, though, scored a brilliant try. Didn't he? Helped on by Richardson.
Yes, he did. That was a brilliant bit of play from Richardson.
Cass scored some quality tries in the game.
Daryl Alfords, his try was great. Again, set up by Richardson.
Daryl Alfords is one of the outstanding signings of the season so far, isn't he? And one of the most underrated.
I think value for money.
The person who caught my eye, we mentioned, is Danny Richardson, because I've not been as high on Richardson as other people have been. I think he played in an extraordinary team. But my opinion was, if you couldn't play well in that team, there was something serious.
I'm not sure I could play well in that team. But
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's out of the team. Went to Lee, was poor. When he came into the Saints side, was poor. So I've always felt watching him that when his team aren't quite going and aren't playing well, he struggles. But for me, as much as it was in a defeat, that was one of the most impressive performances I've seen from Richardson, because despite his team struggling, he was in
the thick
of it. I've seen the extended highlights.
If you look at the coaching staff, it's Daryl Powell, Ryan Sheridan, Danny Orr, three brilliant halfbacks.
The thing that's really interesting about Daryl Powell, is he always seems to sign players and rarely makes a mistake in signing players.
Yeah.
I mean, Alfords is a perfect example, isn't he, of a player who, you know, probably many people might not have rated.
And it's time for a shameless plug as well of Aaron's brilliant Total RL piece where he goes behind the scenes of Castleford's recruitment.
It's very
good. 2021.
Well worth seeing.
Recommend it.
TotalRL.com
website.
It's
essential rugby league reading, that.
Yeah, it is.
Well, that's Castleford. Wakefield.
I
know we had a good chat there about Gareth Widdop and that kind of thing and the weather conditions, but it was a good win, that, against Warrington.
Well, they played in very similar conditions last year against Hull KR and lost. So that's a big thing for them. It's a good win for them. They needed that because, rightfully, the fans were fuming after losing to Hull KR in the manner that they did in particular.
I think it will be a Cass win, but Wakefield have it within them to spring a surprise, but they haven't done in recent years.
I think one of the key factors is that Ryan Hampshire has come in to replace Danny Brough and is playing really well at halfback alongside Jacob Miller. And I think that's going to be an important factor in this game. If they can continue that good form, they'll really challenge Castleford. I think Castleford will win, but not by many, probably by about four.
It also depends which players come back for Castleford, because they've got a lot of players that are on the brink of returning and players that have just returned, so that could be a factor.
I'll say this as well, just a quick note. I think Ryan Hampshire is one of the most underrated players in the league.
Yeah, so do I.
Well, that's the Friday night TV game, Castleford against Wakefield, and a big game this weekend there in West Yorkshire. Now, let's talk about the other game on Friday night, Hull KR against Huddersfield. Before we get to Hull KR and their match against Leeds at the weekend, let's talk about the Salford v Huddersfield match. Mm. Not from a Salford perspective, we'll get back to that, but Huddersfield, unbeaten.
Only unbeaten the team in Super League.
Yeah, the only unbeaten team.
Are they this year's Salford?
I said on this show that if there was going to be a surprise package, well, it would be
the real question is Aidan Caesar this season's Jackson Hastings?
Aidan
because
Caesar.
If the answer is yes, then they've got a good chance.
If Huddersfield finish in the top half of the league, Aidan Caesar will win Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he'll get points every week.
He will.
I'll be honest, I don't think he was as good as he will be on Friday. I thought his kicking game was actually quite poor.
But he was rocks and diamonds, wasn't it? There were some good things he did.
He did several things that were really great. He came up with
three pivotal contributions. Try saving tackle in the first 5 minutes. The delightful ball over the top for Senior kicks the winning penalty goal. Mm.
Was this a game where on social media there was a bit of to and fro in? You were saying it was a good game and a lot of people going,
yes. I didn't get well,
some people like just think that the more tries, the better, and sometimes that's not the case. Mm.
It wasn't a rugby game on a highlight reel, but it was. I thought it was a really good battle down the middle.
There weren't a huge amount of errors.
It was a tightly fought game with a 2-point margin in the end, and those games are always.
It was exciting.
We'll come back to the Salford side of that particular equation in a second. But Hull KR, their game wasn't close at Leeds. Leeds, I mean, I don't think it necessarily says anything about Hull KR, but Leeds were on it, weren't they?
I think they copped the backlash of 2 weeks worth of misery from the whole game in the camp, and they just
It did. It also highlighted why they need that forward that they don't have. Like Leeds, they try to find someone who they want, and there's no one on the market. There are players on the market, but no one that they fancy. That's the thing. You can't... Fans...
Beggars can't be choosers.
But the problem is fans see a name picked up, and quite often they've never seen the blokes play, but because they've played in the NRL, why aren't we going for him? Well, there are players on the market while we're on this. One's just gone off it because he's done his ACL, Patrick Cafuti, who's at Melbourne, I think. And there is another fella who has name is lost on me. Albert Vette is also on the market.
Okay. We'll keep an eye on that. TalkWithRL.com if that ever breaks. Hull KR.
I think they'll bounce back and give Huddersfield a really good game, personally. I suspect that Hull KR this year, their main aim is to avoid relegation, I would say.
Well,
and what I suspect, and I can't say this for sure, I've not spoken to Tony Smith, and I don't think he'd admit it if it were true, but I suspect they're going to target games, which they think they can win in order to...
The Broncos.
In a lot of ways, Leeds, you know, you can go to Leeds and win sometimes. They did last year, didn't they? What was worrying for me about Hull KR was, I think you just took a couple of players out of that team, Quinlan and Garbutt, and it all seemed to fall apart.
The problem is, they've already got two out in Mossy Massoy and Wella Haraki.
Yeah,
you take Garb out in particular, and they're your three, I'm not saying best, but your big, three big biggest men. Forwards.
Yeah.
And they're trying, look, they're entertaining to watch because as a result of that, and understandably so, they try to play around teams, which you would do.
Yeah,
and Tony Smith's teams have always done that anyway, but, you know, in particular...
I thought they were very entertaining against Hull FC.
But...
You know, unlucky to lose it in some respects.
They are going to get absolutely butchered down the middle. Mm. Especially, and there are fears that Garbutt's going to be out for a long time as well. So that, you know, they've got a problem.
Well, Hull KR against Huddersfield on Friday night. There's another Friday night game, incidentally. Warrington against Toronto. And how did Gareth Widdop do?
Oh, my God.
We
may have covered Warrington.
Let's cover Toronto then. How long can a mum's trial truly last?
Well...
Because that's a clever way of getting around it, isn't it?
Well, look...
With Gigo... Toronto... By the way, dear listener, we're talking about Tony Gigo.
Toronto insist this isn't the case, but I would assume it is anyway, that it's a month because at the minute that's what they can afford and not be over the salary cap. So they can pay him for a month. If that is the case, they've then, of course, got a month to... move people elsewhere.
And so, I'm interested to see what they do with Gigo.
I was going to come to you for this bit. I mean, Tony Gigo is this season's big enigma because he's been training with Avignon. He's not really on anyone's radar, and it seems like a bit of a waste, to be honest.
I guess he'll be playing halfback or even centre maybe with Chase Stanley not in.
The injuries are mounting up though for Toronto. What's that, what's your expectation for what they can do?
Well, they'll have Stanley Bill back, won't they?
They won't have Stanley Chase though, will they? Because he's still got that.
Chase Stanley. Yeah.
What did I say? Stanley Chase. Chase. What a great name. Chase Stanley.
Chase is long lost.
Player. Yeah, that's right. And also a horse race.
I think Warrington will win, but because Widdop is obviously quality.
He's not. Oh, I don't think Widdop's not a quality player, Alex.
Thank you for clarifying that, Matthew. Those are the games on Friday night. There's a game on Saturday, incidentally. Salford against Leeds. Let's start off by talking about Salford. The kind of ill discipline got in the way of that result against Huddersfield. They could have got that.
Yeah.
It was anyone's game.
The 2 points at the end point, and the sin bin in
it. Sort of always felt the Giants were slightly better throughout. But the brown yellow card did hinder them.
I've not seen the disciplinary decisions.
He got two matches. When the game got in an arm wrestle, Huddersfield just looked slightly better down the middle for me. And the reason. But Huddersfield's last play options were poor and as a result didn't turn that into points.
Yeah.
But Salford defended pretty well on the line.
The one of the best battles was between Sargentson and Joe Wardle. I thought it was a great battle.
Joe Wardle played very well.
He did.
They were both pretty decent, I thought.
Yeah, Sargentson played well. There was some good performance on it. Pauly looked a handful. Well, he is a handful.
The thing with Pauly is he's always a handful.
It's going to be very interesting to see if they play Ollie Roberts this week, isn't it? I should think they'll put him in the 17.
I didn't think that move would get done after the seemingly soured relations after that game.
No, but...
it's all been happening, hasn't it,
post-match? Where there's a desire. The thing that's interesting about this game, or one thing that's interesting, is that last year they played at a similar time of the year. I think it was the third game. And Leeds went over to Salford and really whacked them, if you remember.
Yeah.
Salford, in a curious way, don't always play as well at home as they sometimes play away. And, you know, I think Leeds might be too strong for them again.
Kevin Brown will be a big,
be
loss
a big miss.
Them.
Yeah.
He guided them around the pitch well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the performances from that Hulk Hour win for Leeds. Luke Gayle was
better.
Newman was good.
Newman looks a potential.
It was
star,
very nice to watch, wasn't it?
In a lot of ways, it's so easy when you dominate down the middle, and that's how Luke Gayle made it look. He made it look really easy because he had all that time to kick the ball, no pressure, kicks the ball on a dime, and it makes it so easy for Harry Newman to score all these great tries.
Newman's a player. Newman is a player. I mean, I interviewed him yesterday, coincidentally, and he's not a big lad. Pound for pound, he's got to be one of the strongest players in the comp.
He's a real potential star, isn't he?
Are you optimistic about Leeds this season now after seeing them?
I don't think Leeds are good enough to win the competition.
Are they good enough to push a bit more?
Leeds are only good enough to be well away from the relegation.
Leeds for me, I will stick by what I said. I think Leeds will be in and around the playoff chase. I think they will either just get in or just miss out. You've still got the likes of Newman playing week in, week out, Walker playing week in, week out, Aledski playing week. These are young lads that aren't going to play well every single week. They are going to come a sticker.
This game at Salford, though, on Saturday, is actually a crucial game for Salford, because obviously if they lose it, it'll be 2 points from four games. And that's, you know, they're going to start getting to the point where it's hard to catch up the others, particularly with one or two players out like Kevin Brown. So they could do to win this game, really, if we're honest about it.
Brown's missing for two big home games, Rhinos and Wakefield next.
Sunday, one match, Wigan against Hull.
Good game.
It is a good game, that, isn't it? What do you make of Wigan's performance against Toronto?
The thing is with Wigan, and this is what Wigan do, they've got the job done. I haven't been overawed by the performances, if I'm honest.
I think they've been bailed out by French on a few occasions.
Yeah, Bevel French is looking really
good. Yeah, he looks
a real player.
Wigan ruined Toronto with inside balls to Bevan French, and French's speed, step-in ability.
That ball from Farrell
to
French.
His footwork is probably the best in the whole competition.
Yeah,
I think.
Although
Harry Newman, we've just been talking about, who rivals him.
He just has that elusiveness about him.
There's an element of Ben Barber about Bevan French.
There is. He's not that level, but
there's comparisons in style. But I've not been blown away by Wigan.
No,
if I'm honest. But then again, you'd counter that and say, well, they've won two out of three.
But they probably worked Toronto into the ground in the middle. They just had enough. They just kept on going and going and going. Eventually,
That's what we can do well.
Hull are the enigma, aren't they?
Because, I was going to say, can that work against Hull?
I mean, Hull, two great wins to start with, and then crashing against St Helens in the second half. One or two players missing, you know. Manu Mao was missing.
I think you said it on Sunday, Martin. This is typical Hull.
Yeah, yeah. They're the great enigma of Super League, aren't they? Play well one week and then get heavily beaten the next. So which Hull team is going to turn up at Wigan on Sunday?
The thing is, when you watch at the start of the season, we can't. There's no way I'm judging teams off three games. Foolish to do that. But what you can look at is where they were weak last year and if there's any evident improvement in those areas. And for Hull, it was consistency. And after two games, you're thinking, okay. And then they have a second half collapse. I'm like, ah.
But let's not forget this was the Champions.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they played
for sure. So you can't read too much into it.
Well, that's Super League round. I've lost count where we are. There's some teams who've only played two games. Is this round four?
2.75.
Round four. 2.75 recurring. Yes. Round four of Super League taking place this weekend, as well as the World Cup Challenge. And speaking of the World Cup Challenge, we mentioned earlier that the Sydney Roosters were training in Barcelona. And so I thought it would be a good opportunity to talk about Spanish Rugby League. And on Tuesday afternoon, I caught up with the CEO at Valencia. Here's Dean Buchan.
Well, Dean, a big thank you for joining us. Before we get to the future vision and that kind of thing for Valencia, can you just give us a bit of background about how the club's coming to being and that kind of thing?
Yeah, Ben. The project kind of started 18 months ago when I was actually looking for a rugby league club for my children to play in. I've been based out here around 6 years. And there was amateur clubs, but there was just nowhere for kids to play. That then started a whole conveyor belt in terms of looking at player development, how people were getting attracted to rugby league, what was happening with talent here. And then over quite a few conversations and looking into things, Valencia Recanis kind of as an idea was formed and over the last 18 months has come into being.
It snowballed pretty quick as well. I mean, everyone will have seen the friendly that you just had against Featherstone Rovers. So in that 18 months, I mean, how much work has gone into and what work's gone into getting you to this stage that you're at now?
I'd say it's been about equivalent to three full-time jobs. Most people didn't hear about Valencia Recanis until probably August, September time. We were a little bit different to other expansion clubs in the sense that we went and actually did put everything in place and then announced who we were and what our intentions were. The last 6 months has been pretty spectacular in terms of we've put our full proposal to the RFL. We've obviously amassed a squad. We've found facilities. And then we've obviously played our first game against Featherstone in January. So to any outsider looking in, it's happened very, very quickly. But actually, it's been a lot of work just to get it to this point, and there's a lot more work to get it to where we want to get it to.
Obviously, you know, you've played Featherstone Rovers, and the facilities are fantastic. And there's obviously been also other clubs coming out as well for training and that side of things. So, I mean, when it comes to facilities, that seems to be in place.
Yeah, we've worked hard. We've worked hard to do that. And, you know, you just referenced two Super League clubs coming out, you know, Leeds Rhinos and Salford, using our facilities. So, you know, if it's good enough for Super League, then I'm sure it's good enough for us and League One. But really, the, you know, much more than facilities, you know, you're referencing the game against Featherstone. And to some people, they might look at the result and it's very spectacular. Obviously, we took a thumping from Featherstone. But the game was never about the result. It was about demonstrating what is it like to come as a club, as a fan, out to Valencia and watch rugby. And from that perspective, the game was a huge success. You know, we had over 250 Featherstone fans who had a fantastic time. Many have sent emails to us thanking us, telling us they want to come back next year. Speaking to David at Featherstone Rovers, they had a fantastic time. I know we've reported back to the RFL how brilliant it was, how well we looked after them. So from that perspective, we've showcased what it's like to come out and play rugby in Valencia.
You touched upon the ambition to be in League One and that side of things, but it's much more than that, isn't it? It's about growing the game in Spain, and obviously there's been World Cup qualifications to try and get to World Cup 2021, but Spain obviously just missing out. How important do you think for Spanish Rugby League and the growth of the game is to have a thriving Valencia in the system, do you feel?
It's essential. I'll just explain as to why. Rugby is an emerging sport here. Participation's up 10-15% every year, but it's an amateur sport. There's been a period of time here in Spain where there's not really been any structure, and also in terms of talent and player development, there's been no outlet for those players. One of the key elements of Valencia Vacanes is player development. You know, we hear all the time that there's not enough players. There's not enough players in the league, in the UK system. And there's not enough quality players. Where's the player development coming from? And so we really don't have any interest in being an expansion club full of UK, Australian, French players. You know, our vision is to be Spanish players developing in Valencia Vacanes who start off in the amateur game, pass into professional game in Valencia Vacanes, and who knows where they go from there. You know, if they end up in Super League, if they end up in Australia, fantastic. And that all feeds back into the Spanish game. Now, obviously, to do that, we have to develop the Spanish game here in terms of the amateur level, domestic league, which is something that we're working on now. We have a new league starting this year. We have a number of clubs all the way from Barcelona as far down as Malaga and across to Madrid who have made applications. And that league will go from strength to strength in the next 2 or 3 years, which will again feed back into Valencia, which will again feed back into the national game. And, you know, hopefully we're talking in a couple of years' time and Spain is in the World Cup competing against the best nations.
And with that regard, it's kind of similar to what we've seen with the Newcastle Thunder, where you've got a club there in League One, but it also it's underpinning a local thriving community game. Is that similar to what you're proposing here?
Yeah, at the minute, you know, people might not know, but a lot of the players that we use are French-based players in the Spanish national team. And what we want to do is we want to strengthen the domestic game here and have that conveyor belt of talent, you know, because that's what's going to make Spanish rugby successful. It's what's going to develop the game. The culture here is very different than the North American culture. And if we really want to attract fans to rugby league in Spain, then we need to have a Spanish club with Spanish identity. That's what Valencia Huracanes is about. But obviously, you can't have a country with its hopes pinned on one club. And so we need community leagues, we need amateur leagues, and that's what we're working on, developing youth leagues so that kids can pick up a rugby ball and they can choose league over union. Because at the minute, that doesn't exist here.
That then takes us to the plans for entry into League One. So where are those plans up to?
Well, in terms of, you know, what we've passed to the RFL, we've passed our full proposal. We passed that to them in October. That was complete with a 3-year business plan. We've had various discussions with the RFL. We've answered every single question that we've been asked. We have no outstanding questions or issues that have been raised with us. We're informed in January that we'd be moving on to the next stage in terms of participation agreement. And we're waiting for that from the RFL.
And when it comes to time frame and that kind of thing, I mean, it's like we said about the Newcastle example, that's taken a few years. But, I mean, it's starting to snowball now, certainly up there in the northeast. So what's your plan for the growth of the Spanish game? How long before we start to see some of those shoots coming up?
Well, we're already seeing it. You know, just something as simple as putting the game on against Featherstone, it made people stand up and notice. Whilst rugby league is in its infancy here, we do have 50,000 people playing rugby union. And there's a lot of those players who are suited to rugby league. So people might think, for example, that there is no conveyor belt already here, but it exists. So I don't think it's a 5-10 year thing necessarily. But at the same time, are we going to walk in League One if we're accepted and completely destroy the opposition? That's just not what our target is. Our target is to develop. You know, it's possible that we might go into League One and it might take us 3-5 years to be competitive, perhaps. But what we want to do is we want to base our club on player development. We want to base it on sustainability. And we want to base it on Spanish talent. Now, we're working, interestingly enough, on organising matches against League One opposition this season. You know, it's clear that each club has a bye because there's 11 teams. We've approached a few clubs of League One, some of who are interested, and we've requested from the IFL dispensation to play in-season friendlies so that we can test ourselves against League One and see exactly where we are and how competitive we can be with the plan that we have.
So how optimistic are you for the future with regards to this venture and rugby league more generally?
Well, in terms of this venture, I'm yet to meet someone, fan or club owner or manager or CEO, who thinks this doesn't make sense. There's a lot of discussion in terms of where expansion clubs should be or should not be coming from. You know, there's, you know, the arguments for North America and arguments for Eastern European, and that's for somebody else to decide which are the right ones. But in terms of the Valencia plan, you know, it does make a lot of sense. It's cheap for fans. It's accessible for part-time or full-time players. You know, you can fly anywhere from the UK to Valencia every single day. And it's an emerging nation. You know, Spain was in Euro AIDS for the first time this year. A lot of good things are happening. So if logic prevails, yeah, we should, if on merits we deserve it, we should gain entry to League One. But, you know, that's for the clubs, that's for the fans, that's for the RFL to decide. That's not for me.
Dean Buchan there, CEO of the Valencia Hurricanes, at @Los_Hurricanes on Twitter. Interesting interview, that. Big thank you to Dean for joining us on this week's show. Later we'll be hearing from the Devon Sharks as well, because they've been entered into the Southern Conference this season, so catch up with them about rugby league in the Southwest. But let's talk about Championship now. Three teams remain with 100% records after three games. Lee looked pretty formidable, nilling York at the weekend.
For me, I thought Lee's win over York was the result of the weekend.
Because York were renowned for how good they were defensively. And Lee absolutely pumped them. It's a really good result, that.
Toulouse won there. It was the first away of the season, and they won against Sheffield in Doncaster. London also had a great win at Widnes. Fever also unbeaten, winning their match against Bradford, whilst both Batley and Oldham picked up their first wins in the league, as did Dewsbury. This was a bit of an ill-tempered game on Tuesday night, Matthew. Two red cards.
Two yellows. Deserved to win.
Any other thoughts, Matt?
Halifax, well, if you want my honest assessment, Halifax conceded 10 penalties in the first half. They had 10 sets and only completed three of them. It was quite miraculous that they were only 6-0 down to three penalty goals at half-time, to be honest.
And they only lost by two in the end.
And they actually scored more tries than Dewsbury. Mm. So, you know, it was a... They were the masters of their own downfall. Were Halifax
a difficult game for you?
Great win for Dewsbury, though, and I like Lee Greenwood. He's a good bloke. So good on him.
But the Championship, I mean, you know, the top four teams in the Championship, Lee, Toulouse, London, and Featherstone. It looks to me to be a really interesting battle for that top spot.
Well, no Championship this weekend, and no League One again. But that's because of the Challenge Cup. The fourth round is in view, and. My question about the Challenge Cup this weekend is, are there any giant killings in the offing here? Just a quick run through just to see if there is.
I think Siddle may have a chance against Newcastle.
Okay, we'll come to that one in a second. But Friday night, Lee Centurions against Batley. Cam Batley, it's a tough game, that one, isn't it?
I wouldn't have thought so.
No.
Batley not bad, but not up to Lee's standard.
Featherstone Rovers against Barrow. Congratulations to Barrow. That's probably, that goal line dropout was probably a world record, wasn't it?
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well done.
It has happened. It has happened.
The referee gone, well, what do I do now?
That's one where the referee is genuinely not sure what the rule is, probably.
Yeah. I don't think that will have. Has that ever happened?
No, it has. The RFL have put a video up of Aaron Brown doing it for Dewsbury, coincidentally against Halifax, a couple of years ago, 2015. So it has happened before.
There was a forward pass in that game as well, which was a ridiculous one.
I think that wasn't a forward pass because a forward pass is a pass that comes out.
It's where the ball ends up, isn't it?
No, it's not. Pass that comes out of the hands forward. That came out of the hands backwards and flew forward.
There we go. Well,
it was hilarious.
Poor call from the referee.
And that's the only time you'll hear that on this show. Just to say. Let's talk about Featherstone Rovers v Barrow then. League One, Barrow, can they do it?
Barrow can go there and compete, I think. Mm. But
Fev won't have the Leeds dual edge players on the Fox. They won't want to come tied for the Cup.
So. No, still be too strong.
Yeah, I would think so.
Sheffield against Halifax. Both teams need a win here, don't they?
Personally, if I'm completely honest, I think Sheffield will win that. I don't think Halifax
both
will
sides haven't had a great start.
Well, Sheffield haven't won.
Sheffield have did okay against Toulouse.
Sheffield are bottom of the league at the moment after three games.
Sheffield have lost all three.
Yeah.
But Halifax, having lost that game on a Tuesday, short turnaround because it's on a Saturday, I don't think they'll play a strong team.
No.
They've got Lee and York the next two league games. I think they'll rest a few and I think Sheffield win that game.
Siddle against Newcastle Thunder. This game kicks off at 2 o'clock.
Is it actually at Siddle?
Yes.
At Siddle.
It's at Siddle.
Right.
Obviously, thoughts go back to the Toronto match a few years ago.
Siddle beat Newcastle in the Challenge Cup not too many years ago. And Newcastle are better now.
Yeah.
But that pitch will be a leveller.
It certainly will. I still can't quite see Siddle beating.
A good bit of practice playing on that Keighley pitch, didn't it?
Very true.
What can we say?
If there is to be a shock in this round, I would suspect that it'll be this game.
They're certainly the amateurs that have the best.
That's not just
chance.
A shock. That's a huge shock, isn't it?
Well, no, because I wouldn't class it as a major shock.
Yeah, but I don't think it'll happen.
It is, though, because Newcastle are at the top of League One.
NCL teams have regularly beaten sides.
The standard is really outstanding.
Who beat North Wales Crusaders last year?
Fato.
But no disrespect to North Wales Crusaders, Newcastle are a different prospect.
For sure they are. Newcastle are one of the better teams. But
on the other hand, Newcastle are focusing on promotion this year, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean,
they won't like to go out to Siddle.
No,
they won't.
They would like to get to the next round where they can draw a Super League opposition.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure they will, because they want all the exposure. Yeah. Listen, Newcastle won't lie down, but I just won't underestimate Siddle.
Swinton Lions against Lee Miners Rangers.
Can't see. Nah, I think Swinton will be all right.
Okay.
There's a lot of former Lee Miners Rangers there are, in that Swinton side, aren't there?
I think they've got a good relationship as well. I'm sure they train with each other occasionally, so they'll know each other as well. Mm. On Sunday, Bradford Bulls against Underbank Rangers. This is going to be on the red button on the BBC website as well.
Underbank have done great work, haven't they, to get where they are? And what a great win against West Wales in the last round. But you just can't quite see it happening at Bradford.
Aaron that said that it was a shame that they don't have the trip to Oddsall to look forward to.
It's a shame, but it's still a big game for Underbank, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Good on him.
London Broncos against the York City Knights. This game will be live on the Our League app. It is probably tie of the round, I'd suggest.
This is
a game that I could see a shock.
What's the shock, though?
York
winning.
North Wales Crusaders against Hunslet.
Interesting game, yeah, I think.
North Wales Crusaders, squad-wise, the pair of them are probably not too far off each other.
I think Hunslet are probably slightly stronger.
Hunslet have recruited well.
Yeah.
So have North Wales, though.
They have. But
Hunslet had that weird home record, didn't they, last year, so they were really good away from home.
Yeah. I think I'd be going Hunslet.
Yeah, I think I would.
Rochdale Hornets against the British Army.
It should be a really interesting and enjoyable game for everybody.
Hornets battered, was it York Acorn? And you know, York aren't mugs. York Acorn aren't mugs. So Rochdale looked like they were pretty sharp in that game.
From
limited highlights I've seen. So I would think they'd progress.
You think so?
Whitehaven against Dewsbury.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Tough away for Dewsbury, that, isn't it? Dewsbury a win, aren't they? They've not had the best of starts.
For Dewsbury, it's the Tuesday turnaround doesn't help.
Although this is Sunday, so it's a bit better than Halifax, isn't it?
Better, but still not ideal, is it? Mm.
Widnes Vikings against Oldham.
Widnes.
Okay. And finally, Workington Town against Doncaster in the old League One affair.
It's another close one.
You wouldn't like to predict this.
I'd
go home team.
Listen, I've put my neck out and
So Doncaster are going to have a big year, so I'm going to have to go with Donny.
Okie dokie.
I think Doncaster could have a big year as well, I've got to say.
Well, a big good luck to everyone in fourth round action in the Challenge Cup this weekend. Now, just before we go, because that's nearly it, I'd just like to bring everyone's attention to Phil Hodgson's community section in the League Express paper this week, where they cover the Devon Sharks, who've been accepted into the Southern Conference. And for more on the Devon Sharks, on Tuesday, I caught up with their director of rugby. Here's Phil Johnson.
Well, Phil, a big thank you for joining us, and an exciting season ahead by the sounds of it at Devon Sharks. Could you just give us a bit of history about the club, how it came into being and that kind of thing?
Yeah, thank you for inviting us to share the Devon Sharks story and what we plan to do in the near future. Devon Sharks were created in 2006. They were part of the Rugby Football League initiative to try and form new clubs, certainly in the south area, to try and get away from the predominant northern corridor. And as I say, Sharks, they had a rocky start, advertising for players for an unknown sport, certainly in an area that's well known for its other rugby code. It was quite difficult to get players, but they managed to do it, and they've certainly not looked back since.
And when it comes to rugby league in the southwest more generally, I mean, it's kind of an untapped resource in a lot of ways. Yeah, we had Brian Noble on the show a while ago, and he was talking about the rugby players who play around Exeter and that kind of thing. I mean, there are a lot of good rugby players of either code, and a lot of potential down there, that's for sure.
Yeah, massively. We certainly work close with the rugby union clubs. The rugby union clubs have started recognising that when their players return from a season, a summer of rugby league, they seem to be a lot fitter, a lot faster. I think union clubs were scared they were going to come back injured. But then when they actually realised there's not that many injuries compared to union, at league, they've started jumping on board with it and seen a lot of improvements from their players.
And one thing that's noticeable on the website as well, devonsharksrl.co.uk, there's a bit about junior development as well. Is that an important side of the club too?
Yeah, I'm originally from Upton, and I started playing rugby at 10-year-old. Certainly taught me a lot through life. It taught me the discipline, the respect. Certainly these days now with computers and technology, it's a bit harder to get the kids out to do a team sport. But again, the parents, since we've brought in juniors, parents have started noticing that their kids have started working well with teams and started skills that they didn't think they had. And that's what rugby league is about, certainly for our junior side of things. We want to get them out in the summer holidays and get them out on the field and enjoy it, enjoy the game.
Sure, and when it comes to the senior team then, you're making the step up this year to the Southern Conference. What's the thinking behind that?
When we took over, me and Peter took over and became on the management side of the Sharks in 2015, the club was plodding along in the southwest. We both sort of sat down and agreed that it is a massively untapped area, that there was big potential. And I always remember reading a quote from G. Kingsley Ward. He wrote, "Dare to dream, dare to try, dare to fail, dare to succeed." We've always looked at that. We've always thought if we fail, we'll learn from it and we'll try again. And the club's certainly succeeding from the hard work put in now.
And what that means is you're part of the western end of the Southern Conference, so there'll be trips to South Wales in there as well as All Golds and the like. So are you looking forward to that challenge?
Can't wait. I, as per individual and certainly as a club member, have always loved the challenge, and the players are really up for it already. Certainly from the contact I've had and the communication with them, they're all ready to go. They see it as a massive challenge, up in their game and learning new skills of rugby league.
And when it comes to them coming to you, facilities and that kind of thing, a warm welcome awaits them in Devon?
Oh yeah, it's a bit rainy at the moment, but hopefully the sun will shine and we can advertise Devon at its best. It's a great place, and it's certainly a great place to visit. They can come down, have a game of rugby and grab some fish and chips if they want at the coast.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it comes to the future for the Sharks, obviously, like you say, it's going to be a challenge this season, but step in the right direction for the club and for the sport more generally in the southwest. So what's your vision for the future of the Devon Sharks as well as the sport more generally down there?
When we took over in 2015, we created a 10-year business plan. We've completed that business plan in 5 years. We wanted to get Devon Sharks into the Conference League, and we've achieved that. What we now look at is how far can Devon Sharks go? It's got great potential, as I say. Financially, it'd be nice to get someone involved in the club who can support financially the club itself. But there's no aim too high. We, as I say, we dare to dream. We'd love to get Devon Sharks as high as we can, certainly, and represent Devon to the highest standard.
Phil Johnson there, director of rugby at the Devon Sharks, at Devon Sharks for more information. But there's the game in the southwest growing quite nicely, which is good
what
to see.
What we want to hear, isn't it? Absolutely.
Exactly. Well, Brian Noble was talking about that, wasn't he, now, in our first show of the season, about the players that are down there.
More than merrier.
Now, just before we go, I'd also like to bring everyone's attention to the NRL Nines and the roundup that took place in Monday's paper. How was, Alex, the NRL Nines this season?
I've said it before that I don't particularly enjoy the Nines format as much as I do the normal game, but it's always an enjoyable experience. And the best thing about the Nines is the young players that you see that come out absolutely nowhere and do brilliantly.
Stages.
And North Queensland Cowboys winger Hamiso Tabawai Fidao, 18 years old, hasn't played a single game of NRL, and is probably the star of the whole show. And that's what it's all about. And
is he a Fijian, by the way?
Papua New Guinean, I believe.
Right.
And the Cowboys won the game. They beat the Dragons in the final, and they were the best team. They were led by Drinkwater, who won the MVP. Scott Drinkwater, Josh's brother. And he's going to have a good season for them at fullback.
What was the cash prize for winning the Nines?
I don't know.
I think it was $500,000 or something like that.
Wow.
I think they offer a big prize to the winner, which is why some clubs go out to win it and some
there was a big controversial moment in the quarter final with St George Illawarra Dragons and Penrith. It was Cody Ramsay who scored a hat trick, and he scored in the final minute to send the Dragons through and the Penrith Panthers out. But he placed the ball outside the in-goal area. But in a lot of ways, because the picture shows it, the still image of him placing the ball on the line, there is a huge amount of stuff in between the ball and the linesman. The linesman has no idea where that ball's placed. The referee, again, coming across, probably doesn't have the depth angle at it. But it just reinforces the idea that video refs are mandatory, because the video ref would see that. Yeah. And with this wild try.
Now, we started the show talking about the World Cup Challenge, and the NRL here clearly have put some backing behind this Nines tournament. Without getting too bogged down in the Nines concept or anything like that, a couple of people have asked, can it work it up here in the Northern Hemisphere? I'd suggest looking outside the window, maybe not in February.
I'll tell you what they've done, though. They took it to Perth. They made it an expansion exercise, and it could work in that kind of way. Because
could it work in the south of France, for example, Alex?
Well, potentially, yeah, because it's very much a festival feel to it, and that would work down in the south.
It's more of a
really nice and
it's got more of a festival feel to it than the Magic Weekend in many respects.
You see,
because all the clubs are on all the time.
Yeah, you see all the teams, and it's quick fire action. But the bad thing about it is that you're not showing them the actual game; you're showing them something else.
It's a taster.
When I go to the cake
counter at Booth's or somewhere like that, or Waitrose, if you will, and part of the media, you understand. You know, you have a little sample, don't you? Oh, that's delightful. Or, not for me, thank you.
It'd be like having a
bit partridge, that wasn't it?
I can't think of a suitable analogy, but you're sort of having a bit of something that isn't exactly the same as what you're buying.
Every sport now has multiple versions. For example,
I'm just throwing this out there as an idea. You had a little tournament organised in Marseille or Montpellier, for example, in February, where the weather's not going to be a problem. You invited along Wigan, St Helens, Carcassonne, Catalans, Toulouse, whoever you wanted, for a nice little nine-a-side tournament. Would that not be a kickstart for...
No, it'd be an absolute disaster, because we're already asking fans to travel out to Catalans to watch the team, to travel out to Toronto to watch the team.
It doesn't have to be.
You don't want 20 people there.
But it wouldn't be, would it? Because you're advertising to the south of France. You're going to have cream of rugby league.
What crowd would you get? Penrith
had 14,000 there for the final.
Right, 14,000, and it's much bigger over there than it is over here.
Perth, by the way.
What did so I where say?
Penrith.
Oh, sorry.
So what we getting in the South? How many people go out of South of France to watch an RL Nines competition? Honestly,
yeah, I think it wouldn't be about sending people from this country. Yeah. It'd be about getting people locally. People yeah.
How many people would go to an RL Nines competition?
But you've got to work at it. You've got to
not even.
I'd say if you had it in if you had it in Carcassonne, I think you'd fill the Albert.
But it wouldn't have to be the South of France. It could be anywhere if you wanted to use that.
Well,
as an
the thing is, though, it would have to be planned very carefully.
Yes,
What about a listen? What about taking it to Toronto?
Listen, yeah. That'd listen. Be great. You've got
they would lap it up. Yeah.
You've got.
I think that's where you would get a big crowd.
But the travel, I pick South France because it's quite modest travel costs.
You've already got. Costs on Magic Weekend, on Toronto, on Catalans.
Just an idea, Matthew. Just brainstorming here, mate.
Yeah,
just brainstorming.
And I'm telling you, it won't work.
Matthew, they're reflecting the negativity surrounds rugby.
No, you
see,
and Mark.
It takes a Lancastrian on this show to bring a bit of optimism.
Listen. When are you playing it?
No, this in February. Instead,
you're playing it in February.
No, you'd do it in the summer.
That's where I wouldn't go.
February. Midway through the season?
No. I'd agree with you about the season being parallel with the NRL.
The Nines needs to be played when it's really nice weather.
That's why I picked France.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Oh, no, France in February is quite
we'll
nice.
Stick with, we've agreed that we're going to get no one in France, but now you're saying Toronto where it's
me,
snowed
Keith,
under in February.
Keithley in Newcastle would appreciate it.
No, I'm taking you to task here. You can't play at the start. If you play it February, right, you're wanting to move the season back so it's in line with the NRL.
Yeah.
You got the World Club Challenge. So where are you playing the Nines?
Just this weekend.
The weekend just gone.
Yes.
Right. So then you've got the World Club Challenge.
Yes.
And then you've got
the season starting.
Starting.
No games postponed.
So you've got the season starting March.
Yes.
That means that the season is starting 4 weeks later.
Mm-hmm. I'd also get rid of loop fixtures
so that
and two
means,
more teams
hang on,
as well.
Hang on, that means that you're getting 4 weeks onto the season, so that means that your grand final's November 12th.
No, it doesn't.
Well, when was the grand final?
Listen to what Ben says. He's saying get rid of the loop fixtures.
Okay. No, okay. So that gets rid of two fixtures. Yeah. If you're adding two extra teams, 14 teams, you're getting rid of two fixtures.
Yes.
So you've added 2 weeks onto your season.
Mm-hmm.
So go away from November 12th, whatever it is. That's the last
week.
We're still finishing the season
in October.
No. Yeah. When does the World Cup
start? And we've all had a good time.
When does the World Cup start in 2021? By this proposal, we'll have the grand final on the Saturday and we'll start the World
There's
Cup.
There's a whole discussion
we'll
to be had
World
about
Cup.
The format
we just
of
said
next season.
It would
season.
Be quite nice to have.
Yeah.
This is why we can't have nice things at least.
It's not happening.
That's the end of the show. A good discussion there at the end. A big thank you to Dean from Valencia and Phil from Devon for joining us on this week's show. Big thank you as well to Matthew Shaw. Big thank you to Alex Davis.
Thanks,
big thank you to Martin Zadler. And wherever you go in this weekend, make sure you have fun.